Okay, having seen quite a bit about the topic of Tashbisu and how exactly it plays out, either as a active obligation or a active result-based obligation, or as a passive state, the various possibilities that we saw, and trying to understand it a little bit in context, we'll now try to consider it in its relationship specifically to Bayirah, Bayimatzeh, and let's try to understand the broader concept of the prohibitions of Bayirah, Bayimatzeh. So there's a lot that we need to try to understand, and we'll just kind of open that up today while trying to put it in some type of a framework. So to begin with, knowing what you know now about the topics of Bedikas Chametz and Bittul Chametz and Tashbisu, so now to approach, in a sense, the elephant in the room, a lot of it has been revolving around Bayirah, Bayimatzeh, although that itself still a step away from the prohibition of actually eating Chametz. But what is it that we need to figure out about Bayirah, Bayimatzeh? What are some of the questions that would present themselves that if we were to investigate this topic, we would want to try to get answers to? Menachem? Oh.
What Chametz does it apply to?
This meeting is being recorded.
So what Chametz is applied to? So that's a big question. But that could mean many different things. So just, do you want to clarify a little bit when you say what Chametz, what kinds of possibilities?
A couple of possibilities, whether you own it, you're holding it for someone.
Okay. Okay, so let's be more specific about that. What kind of relationship between you and Chametz are we considered, are we concerned about? So that's not so much about what kind of Chametz, that's about what kind of connection is a problem. Is it legal ownership? Is it something short of that, something more than that? Okay. What else? Yeah, Ellie?
Maybe if it's like two lavim, or if it's two sides of the same coin, like one lav or two lavim.
Okay, so that is a big question. Why do we've just been kind of blurring that in a sense by always mentioning that together, but it would seem like one should be enough. Well, all you need is lav. Why do you need two lavim? And so are the two lavim somehow a unit? Are they covering space one that the other one doesn't cover? And that certainly presents itself as a major question. That's definitely something we need to explore. What exactly is the scope of each lav by itself? What is the scope of them together? What's the need for the two of them? So let's try to explore that for sure. What else? Any other questions that come to mind? Well, there are other details. Menachem, you said what kind of chametz. We also need to try to figure out if there are types of chametz that are somehow removed from the iser, and if so, why and when and where. And we also need to figure out what exactly is the timing of this iser, or these iserim. And, of course, as we indicated, how do Tashbisu and the Baals interact with each other? So let's take a step back on that and try to consider what we've mentioned along the way, but let's try to all bring it all in one place. So what is the concept behind Bayirah, Bayimatzeh? So we have mentioned many times the Ran, right? The Ran that we saw at the beginning of the Masechta. And the Ran is very likely representing a dominant position here, a position that may indeed be a consensus position, even though it's most explicitly associated with the Ran. And the Ran says that this is essentially a harchaka, that chametz is a problem, eating chametz is a serious iser, And therefore, the Torah created an extra safeguard through these prohibitions of Bayira Bayimatza. And this brings up all kinds of issues. So why specifically here? Why Chametz as opposed to other Torah prohibitions? It brings up the idea that the Torah engages in these kinds of activities, that there are mitzvot in the Torah itself that are there to protect other mitzvot, and we've mentioned that a few times, that Rav Yosef Engel made this idea well known in his Sefer Lekach Tov, where he came up with a whole list of many examples throughout Halacha where you have a mitzvah from the Torah itself, and yet it functions like what we would associate with the Din Derabanan. It functions as a protective concept, that it doesn't necessarily represent something inherently bad, but is there to create space so that we shouldn't violate another Torah concept. So that itself is a very interesting idea. So Rav Yosef Engel points out that there are all these examples, and right at the top of his list is this rhyme, that Bayira Bayimatze seems to be in that category. And we discussed also at the beginning of the year the Radbaz and his Shuva, where he also highlights the fact that we perceive the negativity around Chametz from the fact that there is this cluster of mitzvot that surround it. It's not only a prohibition of eating, but it's a prohibition that has many associate prohibitions, and that seems to be sending us a message. And we spoke a little bit about what the imagery is behind Chametz, and that is highlighted by the fact that the Torah puts such distance between us and it over the course of Pesach. Now, the Ran, in that comment, so he also takes up the question of why is it that out of all the Yisurim in the Torah, do we do have this focus on Chametz, aside from whatever symbolism there is that has its own weight to it, whether it's symbolic of the Yetzer Hara or of Avodah Zarah or of some related bad idea, but just as far as its practicalities, why does the Torah make a special safeguard here? Right, and we saw that there were two factors. Right, what were the two factors? Larry, raising hand. So right. So one is just the psychological element. Right? That the first factor was the chiyuv karet, the fact that the onesh is greater. So that is a bigger deal than, let's say, pork or cheeseburgers or things like that. But psychologically, the idea that we are not used to avoiding chametz, that we're not separated from it because 51 weeks a year we do eat chametz, so that creates the need for a greater distance. And we spoke about that a little bit when talking about Dinim D'Rabbanan, about how Chazal are responsive not only to severity, but they're also responsive just to likelihood, and how sometimes you'll find a greater care and precautions taken, not because what we're dealing with is so chomer, but because it happens to be just a greater risk of violating it. So in the case of chametz, it's both. It's chomer, it's a karet, but it's also a greater risk because we are not separate from it. It's very interesting to note that, and the way this fits into this whole approach, that the Rashbetz, in his Sefer Yov and Shmua, so he also takes the perspective that Bayira Bayimatze is to distance us from eating chametz. And he explains in that sense why it is, as you got to see a little bit from the Gemara's coming up, why is there an exclusion for chametz shel hektish? If chametz is associated with the Beis HaMikdash, why is there a hetter for Bayira Bayimatze in that case? So he had an interesting comment. Maybe you can try to anticipate what it is, based on what we've said in the past few minutes. why should Chametz Shel Hekdesh maybe be accepted from Bali Ro Bali Matze? Ari?
Throughout the rest of the year, we're always separated from Hekdesh Chametz.
Ah, exactly, right? That is a natural avoidance built into Hekdesh as a whole. So, therefore, that Chametz we are distanced from. You know, that it provides its own distancing. So, we don't need a Bali Ro Bali Matze on top of that. Which is a very, very interesting idea. So we also discussed a little bit, you know, why when we're talking about the psychological component, this idea that if you're not in the habit, so it needs greater zehirus. So the same logic should apply to Yom Kippur. Now, Yom Kippur, we also have an Isser Karet, and we're not in the habit of avoiding all food. So why don't we say that all food should be taken out of the house on Yom Kippur, or it should be destroyed. It would be a very expensive proposition, and everyone should have to destroy all food they have before Yom Kippur, and then go shopping again with Yom Kippur. So why don't we say that? So here also there are different ways to consider why the psychology is different. So the most common approach is that if we're not eating at all, it's easier to remember that. And that what's hard is when you might wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Pesach and you're hungry for a sandwich and you're in the habit of eating sandwiches. So if there's bread available in the kitchen, you may make yourself a sandwich. And you have to remember, no, don't make a sandwich, make something else. But if you know you're not eating at all, so that already creates a certain presence in your consciousness, and that's easier to abstain from. The Chasam Sofer, we'll talk about more in a few minutes, the Chasam Sofer in his Sefer Al Torah, has a different component. He says it's simply about duration, that Yom Kippur is one day long, although it may feel much longer in the moment, but Yom Kippur is one day long. So, okay, we're not so worried that we're going to forget it's Yom Kippur. But over the course of a week, the possibility that you may forget for a moment that it's Pesach and reach for those pretzels is a relatively high risk. So, in the understanding of these Rishonim and Achronim who mentioned these details, this not only plays a role in how Chazal decide to enact Gezeros, right? There we mentioned it comes from an additional factor, that the ability, the authority vested in the Chazal to make Gezeros is premised on the assumption that there is a great need. If they didn't make Gezeros casually, that they did so in response to some serious concern. And that is a combination of both severity and risk and likelihood of there being a problem. So Chazal had to factor all that in terms of how they make their gezeros, when they got involved, when they made enactments. And what we see here is that the understanding that these Rishonim and Achronim are taking to the Psukim and the Chumash is that that is also a part of how the Torah is approaching the halakhic structure, that the Torah itself is enacting dinim that respond to those psychological components, the risk factors and the like. This is a very interesting thing to think about. Now, the Meiri also has a comment along these lines at the beginning of the Masechta, but what should call your attention to is that he says that because of these concerns that we're not separated from it, so therefore the Torah commanded, the word he used there is Leva'aro. And so that we have to also pay attention to, is he saying that the Chi of Beer specifically, which is what we would associate maybe with Tashbisu. So is he putting Tashbisu and Bayira, Bayimatze in the same package here and saying that Tashbisu is because of the concern that you may come to eat Chametz? So that's something we'll have to keep in mind, see if everyone agrees with that. But it's interesting to note that that's the language that the Meir uses when he puts this together. And also to continue this theme of model that the Torah is giving here. So I was talking to Menachem during Seder, pointed out that this seems to line up, the idea that you see, Menachem pointing out that you look at the various dinim, and indeed they all seem to correlate to a concern for eating chametz, and seems to make the case that that's what Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh is about. And he noted it seems to line up with the Tosfos in the beginning of the Masechta, that invokes a fear of eating chametz as a crucial issue. So we're discussing during Seder that yes, that's true, but that Tosfos is talking about what Bedikah is meant to address. That the obligation of Bedikah chametz, Tosfos says, is because we may come to eat the chametz that we may find, and therefore we have to preemptively search for chametz and get rid of it to reduce that possibility. While Rashi had said it was because of Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh. So that machlokes is where that came up. And just to sharpen it a little bit, so that's all talking about Bedikas chametz, but it all revolves around this, because either Bedikas chametz is also there to keep us from eating chametz, or Rashi says it's because of Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh, but we're seeing that Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh itself is very likely about not coming to eat the chametz. But what I should also mention in support of Menachem's point is that that Tosfos is indeed relevant here, because Tosfos is assuming that Bedikas chametz is a din d'rabbanan, but he's explaining, how did Chazal know that this is something that they need to do? Where did Chazal get the idea that they should make an enactment, which is really a positive obligation, it would seem, to search the house for chametz? How did they know that this was something that was necessary? Because they saw that the Torah was so machmir about it, that because the Torah set up a extra level of distancing, the Torah itself said, don't just be aware not to eat chametz, but also don't own any, don't have any around, Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh. So, therefore, they perceived that this was a path they should take, and they built an extra step onto that, that you should look for the chametz and make sure to get rid of it. So what Tosfos is basically saying, almost explicitly, is that Chazal picked up the cue from the Torah, that the Torah sent out this message that we have to keep ourselves far away from chametz on Pesach. So Chazal added Bedikas chametz in response to that. So there is a nice discussion about this. One of the many, many great losses that we had this year, so many terrible losses from the rabbinic leadership of Klal Yisrael, the Reb Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, the Chassadic Levracha, was really one of the great, great assets of the Torah world. And one of the svarim that was published from his shiurim not so long ago is a paper called Nesiv Mitzvotecha, where he talks a lot about Tamei HaMitzvot in the context of these mitzvah. And he has a piece about Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh and Tashbisu. He considers the two of them together. And he invokes this idea that we find in these Rishonim and elsewhere, that Ba'ira Ba'imatzeh is a siag of some kind, is a harchaka. And he asks the question, he says, how do you know that? And how do you know, okay, so it could be that's true, but maybe the Torah just doesn't want us owning chametz. How do we know that it is a specific relationship to the Isser Achila that is being transmitted here? And he suggests that it's simply because it's so unusual, right, that we have many substances that we're not allowed to eat, let's say. We have many Surya Achila in the Torah, And sometimes it's a more chamer iser. We find we're not allowed to be neneh from it either. So we have isuri hana, such as chamit, which are a more intense prohibition than the standard isuri achila. Okay, so we have a few levels. But where do you find anything else that we're not allowed even to own it, that we're not allowed even to have it in our house on a Torah level? So that's unique. So if that's the case, maybe that calls our attention, that's a red flag, that there's something unusual here, and that's how we should understand it. That it is kind of a siag min haTorah. Now, yeah, Ari?
Doesn't the pasuk in Parshat Bo, when talking about Lo Yemaseh, say if Lo Yemaseh, like, you should basically not have Seor in your house, and you should not be able to find it, ki kol ahel masmeset, minich shanech shi, right? So doesn't the Torah itself spell out, like, a somewhat formulation of a safeguard? Because you might get cards to eat it, don't find chametz in your house. So it seems that the Torah is also implying that.
Okay, so that is an excellent point. So excellent that the Chassam Sofer quoted you on that point. So the Chassam Sofer makes that observation of Sefer HaTorah. That, he says, you could actually find both points of the Ran in the Pasuk. Because the Pasuk says both ideas, that Ki Kol Ochel Chametz Nefersa. Right, so Chametz is more severe. It has the onesh of Karis. And then the pasuk goes on to say that over the course of the 7 days of Pesach, we have this prohibition. So he notes that that seems to package both ideas in one flow. That it's a temporary prohibition only applying during this week. And that it has this great severity of Karis. Now in terms of the actual flow of the pasuk, the part about Karis is a little more compelling. It sounds like that's what the Torah is emphasizing specifically its severity. The idea that it's also emphasizing the temporary term, maybe that's a little bit more of a stretch of an interpretation, but his point is nonetheless well taken, that both ideas are contained in the pasuk all as one flow. So that's Ari's point, and maybe indeed it is explicit in the Torah, although it's also interesting, and we'll come back to this, that the pasuk he's referring to starts with Tashbisu. So he's coming off the premise that Tashbisu and Bayira, Bayimatze are all one idea, and that we can glean the logic for Bayira, Bayimatze on the pasuk of Tashbisu. But that might be a little bit arguable, and that's a part of what we also want to try to put on the table today. So, in the context of this discussion, so Zalman Nechemiah and that Sefer, so he notes that one reflection of this idea you can find in the Rambam, that hopefully you got to see today. There's a Rambam where he talks about the prohibition of Taruvus Chametz. And the way the Rambam is interpreted by the Magid Mishnah and the Kesef Mishnah is that the prohibition of Taruvus Chametz only applies if you have a kezias of Chametz that is mixed in with the other things. So the Taruvus is a mixture of Chametz and other substances. So the Chametz part has to be a kezias. And they go on to say, not just that there should be a kezias of chametz there, but that it should be enough, that it should be in a way that you can consume the kezias in the right time zone. Today, achilas pras, the time it takes to eat a loaf of bread, which la halacha, the various opinions, is somewhere between 3 minutes and 9 minutes. So enough chametz that you will be able to consume it in that period of time. So the question is, well, why do we care about that? Right, we're talking about the issue of ownership here. We're not talking about the issue of Achila. So why is that the crucial component that you can eat a Kedashila's prop? So he explains that presumably it's because of this idea that if we assume that the driver of the prohibition of Ayra Bayimatze is the concern to eat it, so then the circumstances that would make it a full-blown Isser Achila are going to be relevant to defining Vayira Bayimatze also. Now that itself really could ask, even before the Kedei Achila's part, but the idea of their Kedaius being relevant, and that's something that we'll see a little bit down the line, not so far, if it comes up on Davos, if God willing, we'll see that a little bit also. The whole question of just the sheer kedayis for Bayira Bayimatze, and assuming that there is a prohibition that has a sheer here, that Bayira Bayimatze is subject to a kedayis, presumably itself is based on that relationship, that it's about achila, because not every sheer in the Torah is kedayis. Kedayis comes up when we are focused on defining achila, that we have a halach l'moshe m'sinai, we have a tradition. Gemara says in Yuma that the shiurim halach l'moshe m'sinai. We have a tradition that achila is the kedayis. So if you're going to have less than a kedayis, so then you would be potter. So it makes sense that the Isser Bayira Bayimatze should also be defined by a Kezayas. Now, we've been talking about in the past week about whether there's Malkus for Bayira Bayimatze. So in order to address that, part of the question is, what is the Shear? So how much Chameis do you have in order to be even part of a discussion about whether you're Chayav Malkus? Right, we saw that the actual Chi of Malchus is pretty unlikely because many Rishonim understood it to be Lav Hanitar Kla'ase, and therefore you wouldn't have Malchus for that reason. The Rambam focused on Lav Shein Bo Maisa and said there could be circumstances where you could do it, but for the most part, the average person is not going to, the average otherwise observant Jew is not going to end up doing these things. So otherwise, Pesach observant Jew is not going to end up doing these things. So in most cases, not going to get Malkus. But to whatever extent there's a potential for Malkus, so then we have to figure out what the Shear is. So if the Shear is a Kezias, so then that itself seems to indicate that we're talking about Achila as the main driver of things. And then to add on that, this idea that it's not only a Kezias, but a Kezias Kidei Achilas Pras, that that's what you would need in order to really enter into a full chiyuv on a d'oraisa level. Now, here there's an additional component to add on to. Right? The idea that the Isser Bayira Bayimatze applies to Chametz to Taruvus, that's based on a Mishnah, on Daf Mem Beis, which I think I showed you, I think I put on the Makoros earlier on in the year, so I didn't put on again today, but just to remind you, definitely refresh your memories, take a look. It's the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Pesachim. It says, Elu over the Pesach, and lists various types of chametz that really are a product of chametz and something else. What is included in the idea of kol machmetzes, lo sochelu, anything that could bring about chametz. So based on that Mishnah, so Rashi and the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch all paskin that the Isser Bayira Bayimatze applies even to chametz b'taruvus, even to chametz that is in the category of kol machmetzes, and all of that is subject to Bayira Bayimatze. However, Tosfos over there disagrees. If you recall, I think I'm pointing to Tosfos here early in the year, but it goes Tosfos over there in Daf Mem Beis in Sachem. That Tosfos says, no, it doesn't mean there's an Isser Bayira Bayimatze. And Elu Ovrim shouldn't be read the opening lines of the parak, what the parak is called, right? So it's a machlokus, what the parak means. It shouldn't mean that you are in violation of Bayira Bayimatse. That there's an Isser that has that whole status that applies to these items. Because it doesn't apply to these items. And Elu Ovrin just means take it off the table. But it doesn't mean that you're over the Avera of Bayira Bayimatse. So why does Rabbeinu Tam say that? So actually, I'll read you the language of the Tosis. Open it up. Days and hours, they will open the Pesa. Perisha, Quintus, Lavo, Alayim, Bayira, Bayimatse. The gam revolt medactic molestion overim, mashma overim and olam. That you have to destroy it. Take it not avera, but take it out of the world. The ain nira la rabbeinu tam. Rabbeinu tam didn't think so. The mashma the kohanach marbina mikol machmetas lo sochelu. The afilu bachila lo havi machayev. He loved the rabbi akra. That even achila would not have been usher were it not for the extra pasuk coming to include it, kol machmetzes. So where should you get the idea that bayira bayimatze applies to that? The nira l'beinu tam, l'beinu tam says the elu over in perisha ochlin, the over in hainim el shulcha, slav v'mechal ninu. So bayira left. So it just means over and take it off the table because you shouldn't eat it. You shouldn't have it on your table on Pesach. But it doesn't mean that there's a prohibition of Bayira Bayimatze. So why is Rabbeinu Tam feel this way? So I thought you could suggest a little bit of a Mechudish idea that if we work off the premise that Bayira Bayimatze is indeed a siag, a harchaka. So we know that when we deal with dinim derabbanan, so we have a notion of ein osin gzeira le gzeira, ein osin siag le siag. We don't combine one siag on top of another. Is that true even if we were dealing with dinim in the Torah itself? With something that would be called a siag min haTorah, something that's on of Yosef Engel's list, that we don't combine to. So, the Prima Gadim thought that yes, you have such an idea. That a siag l'sag is not going to take effect even on a Torah level. And he expressed this in a different context. He was talking about a nazir eating grapes. That the Torah says a nazir is not allowed to drink wine, he's also not allowed to eat grapes. So there's a medrash that he quotes that says that that is also a siag min haTorah. What's so terrible about eating grapes? There's nothing not Kodesh about eating grapes. But the point is, this is to keep the nazir away from wine. So, siag min haTorah. So, if that's the case, what if you were going to have less than a shear of grapes? So the concept of chati shir, which is the prohibition of eating even less than a shir of something, not half literally, but anything less, and we'll see it's a major theme in chametz, for example, or in all of the serum of achilu mitorah. So if you eat chazer, you're chayiv malchus if you have a kezayis. If you have less than a kezayis, you're not chayiv malchus. But it's still Aser, and we pass an Aser min haTorah. It's Machlokas in the Gemara, in the 8th Parak of Yuma, but we pass an Aser min haTorah. So, many Achronim assume that the Isra Chatzi Shir is another example of a Siag Min HaTorah. That really anything less than the punishable threshold is not included in this. But we're worried about the potato chip theory. Now, you know, you can't have just one. If you're going to start having one, then you'll continue having more. So therefore, we have a prohibition not to even get started with something that's punishable, because the assumption is you'll keep going, or you'll be likely to keep going. So if you say that chatzishir is a siag min haTorah, and grapes is a siag min haTorah, so says the Prima Gaudim, you can't combine the two. It's a siag with siag. Everyone following me? So you can't, you don't combine two safeguards. So that is in the Prima Gaudim. And Rav Yosef Engel, who's the king of siag min haTorah, this was too far for him. He says, that can't be. The idea that we have of not combining a siag with another siag, that's because we're dealing with dinim d'rabbanan, and there are limits on the authority of dinim d'rabbanan. Like we said before, that they couldn't make gezeros casually. They only made gezeros when there was a serious concern. So part of those limits is one way to explain it, that Chazal made gezeros to protect Torah law, but they didn't make gezeros to protect their own laws. So therefore, if what we're dealing with is already a siag, so then they're not going to make a siag on top of that. But the whole reasoning is because we're dealing with rabbinic law. But if we're dealing with Torah law, why not? What right do we have to assume that Torah law, you wouldn't have a combination of two safeguards? Akiva? It could be, because we saw that if you're dealing with drabanan, that where we saw that there was kind of a tense relationship between din drabanan and baltosis, so one approach to the relationship is that they can work within their framework but not go beyond it, then yeah, it would be an issue of baltosis. If we assume that a siag with siag is too much, so then that might turn into baltosis. So possibly, yes. But here, if we're talking about Torah law, we're just applying Torah law, there won't be a concern about Tosis. So, all the more so. So, who says it's an issue? So, the Prima Gaudim was very surprising to say that you can combine, you can't combine two Dinim and Torah just because they're both Siag in nature. That seems like a very surprising idea. So I thought maybe we could bring a little bit of a support for the Prima Gaudim. That maybe this Tosfos that we just pointed to is saying something similar. And that when you have a Siag Min haTorah, you don't combine that with another Siag Min haTorah. And how is he saying that? Because what's his whole premise here? That kol machmetes, the chametz and taruvis, should not be combined with bayira bayimatze. So maybe it's because he understands them both to be essentially safeguards against the issur of eating actual chametz. So bayira bayimatze is to keep us farther away from eating, and kol machmetes is to keep us farther away from actual chametz. But each one is a safeguard, and perhaps he's assuming that you don't combine the two. And this might be the explanation of kind of a unusual language in the Tosfos. It again, where he writes that v'afilu ba'achilu lo havi mechaya v'ilav derab yikra, that matkol matlasas even shouldn't have been prohibited in eating if it were not for the pasuk. So what kind of a statement is that? You'll say nothing is usur if not for psukim. Right? Everything is prohibited because the Torah tells prohibited or it isn't. What does it mean to say that it shouldn't have been prohibited were it not for the pasuk? Maybe what he means is that kol machmetzis is really not straight out chametz. and it shouldn't have been included in the prohibition of eating chametz. But the Torah made a harchaka and said that even kol machmas is included. So to combine the two harchakas, we don't do. We don't put a prohibition of vayira vayimatze on top of kol machmas. Maybe that's a little bit of support to the idea of the prima garden. We talked about chassi shir by grace. So then what indeed is the explanation? If it doesn't have the limitations of rabbinic law, we're dealing with Torah law. So why should we say, can't make a siag the siag? So presumably it means that just conceptually, there's no point, it's still too much, that even on the Torah level, so can't call it baltosif, but in the sense of kolamosif goreya, like we saw with the Adam HaRishon, that we don't build one sense on top of another. The Torah is basically setting a standard here that we don't have multiple fences, and one fence is enough. And then maybe you could actually say that that's where Chazal got it from. How did Chazal know Enos and Siag was Siag, and that that was beyond their authority or beyond their mandate overall? Maybe because they looked to the Torah to see how the Torah functions and saw that that was the rule. And essentially, the idea of looking to the Torah and seeing the model is what we just said before in Tosus. Right? That Tosus said that Chazal understood they should make the din of bedikas chametz because they saw Bayira Bayimatze. They looked into the Torah's sensitivities to see what kind of attitudes it's displaying, and they make the din based on that. And therefore, they understood the whole idea of Enos and Siag Lusiag. Okay, everybody with me so far? Make sense? Yeah, Ari?
Right. Could you just repeat what the two Siagim for those both eating the Torah mixture are?
That Kol Machmetzes is perhaps itself a Siag. That's a bigger chiddush because that we hadn't seen so far. But on the one hand, you have Bayira Bayimase, so that is widely understood to be a Siag Min HaTorah. And maybe what Rabbeinu Tam is adding in here, other Rishonim may not even agree with the concept, so may not even agree with the premise. So that may be why they disagree. But that what Rabbeinu Tam seems to be saying is that Kol Machmetzes is not really Chametz. So the prohibition of eating these substances that are not actual chametz, that are mixtures that are made from chametz-type things, is only itself a way to keep us away from actual chametz. So to say that kol machmetzes is not only a prohibition of eating, but it's also included in bayira bayimatze, you can't even own it, that, you would say, is a double fence. And that maybe even the Torah doesn't make double fences. Just to give you a little bit of a preview for what you will see on Davav, but that is going to build on this. If you put the parts together, so if you do assume that there's a problem combining fences, and if we say that Bayira Bayimatze is a fence, and we said that Chatzi Shir could also be a fence. So maybe that should mean there's no prohibition of Bayira Bayimatze less than a Shir, which actually has very significant practical implications. Because the question of how crazy do you have to go searching your house for chametz? What are we trying to avoid? We're trying to avoid Bayira Bayimatze. So if the Isser only kicks in at a Kezias, it would mean that chametz that's less than a Kezias is not something we need to be looking out for, to avoid Bayira Bayimatze. And as far as the intensity of the pre-Pesach cleaning, that actually has practical implications. So the whole sugya of Chatzi Shir by Bayira Bayimatze is its own topic, and it'll come up soon enough. But just mentioning now that this premise that you can't combine two safeguards, that might affect that too. You shouldn't be able to say there's a prohibition of Bayira Bayimatze on anything less than a Kazakh. there are those who say that, and there are those who say it for other reasons, but it's just interesting it could perhaps seem to come from here. So just to put this together, so Reb Zalman Nechemia, in his essay in the Sefer Nesiv Mitzvot Zacha, so he considers all these angles of Bayira, Bayimatze as a siag, as a harchaka for eating chametz. As we started to say before, he said that maybe the clue is the fact that it's a unique kind of iser, that you don't find that by other things. So sometimes it's also b'achila, sometimes something's also b'hana, but achila and hana, and you can't even own it, so you can't even have it in your house, that's pretty extreme. Now, he notes there, he says, there might be something else that the Torah also doesn't allow you to have in your house. Anyone know what that might be? Where else do you have a Torah prohibition of bringing something into your house?
Meiser.
So that's interesting. It's a different kind of prohibition as to how you treat the meiser. But as far as your house, yeah, Levi?
Avodah Zara,
right? So what does the Torah say regarding Avodah Zara? Lo savi so'eva b'veisacha. You can't bring an abomination into your house. So he notes, okay, so maybe you'll say that is a contradiction to what we just said. There is something that the Torah not only prohibits bahana, but also goes further so you can't even have it in your house. So the truth is, you might say, well, that doesn't bother me. I mean, there could be a correlation between Avodah Zara and chametz. That's something that we've struggled with from day one also. We noted the Radbaz had brought that up in ways that we questioned a little bit. So it wouldn't really be so earth-shattering to say that the chametz and the Avodah Zara have that in common. But he goes on to say that it's actually different, because there's things you can prove that that's just a form of the Yisr Hana, and that when the Torah says don't bring it into your house, it means don't bring it into your house to use it. That essentially it's a formulation of the Yisr Hana saying that it shouldn't be brought in for that purpose. But the idea of simply don't have it in your house, that he thinks is still unique to Chametz. And therefore, that shows you that there is something else. But ultimately, he concludes that that's true for Bayira, Bayimatze. There's a preponderance of the evidence, as you might say, that that's the case. But it's not for Tashbisu. That Tashbisu is its own mitzvah. And that's the part of what we've been discussing until now, that especially since they discussed last time, that Tashbisu and Bayira, Bayimatze don't even take place in the same time. The question of how they're related to each other is a part of what we've been struggling with. But he ultimately concludes that they're not coming from the same place. That what drives that question is, what drives that conclusion is the fact that Tashbisu has, if you assume like Rabbi Huda at least, and you say that it has to be done b'treifa, so then, why should we care about that? If the whole purpose is just to keep us away from chametz, so then any way that it's destroyed should count. Right? Which was in line with the point that Reb Chaim Brisker had made and others are making, that if there is any specific form that we care about when it comes to Tashbisu, that seems to suggest it's not just about separating us from chametz, but that there is an active mitzvah that needs to be done. So his conclusion there is that it's not the same, that Bayira Bayimatze is there to keep us away from chametz, and Tashbisu is its own affirmative mitzvah. Now, if that's the case, he says, you have to still account for the fact that they have similar halachos, so they have identical halachos in some ways, such as saying, for example, that this prohibition of Bayira Bayimatze according to the Magen Mishnah, the Rambam is only going to cover chametz b'taruvus if it's enough to eat the kezayis kedeachil's pras. And that same rule applies to tashbisu. So we understand it. When it comes to bayirah, bayimatzeh, that's all about keeping us from eating. So we'll define it by what are the eating requirements. So the tashbisu is not about eating. So then why should we use the same standard? So to that he says, because the Gemara says there's a Gezeirah Shavah of Seor and Seor, we assume that they're the same, they're linked through that, and that therefore the halachos transfer. Even though the reasoning is really by Urah, and it's not really by Tashbisu. So that's an interesting idea we need to consider from a couple of points. So first of all, did everyone agree? So we noted so far today that the Meiri, when talking about this reasoning, he does use the word Levaro. It sounds like he is assuming it's about Teshbisu also. And Ari and Nechtan Sofer, when they pointed to the Pasuk, that highlights the concern of Kol Chametz Nechusa, the Pasuk is talking about Teshbisu. So it sounds like there are reasons to assume that it really are all tied up together, and that Bayirah, Bayimatzeh, and Teshbisu are all coming towards the same goal. But if you do assume they are distinct from each other, so it could be, this is more just speculative, but what we said on day one of Tashbisu, that maybe there are two different types of symbolisms and imageries that come from the Isser Chametz. There is Chametz as Beth, Chametz as the Tahara, Chametz as some kind of a dangerous substance. It should have been Usher all year, and we got a break that's only Usher on Pesach, but Chametz is bad. And there's the other model of Chametz is good, meaning or that Masa is good, and Chametz avoidance as a reinforcement of the good message of Masa, and that Masa is a Zecher for Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it could be that we have two tracks here going on at the same time. That we have the avoidance of chametz because of its negativity, and that's what Bayirah Bayimatzeh is addressing. And also the focus on chametz in order to emphasize matzah, and that's there for Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. So maybe we have the two different dinim if they are indeed separate, in order to highlight two different goals. Now, ultimately, there is still going to be a circularity between them. The reasons are going to tie into each other. And that may still be what the Gezeirah Shavah is highlighting, that the types of chametz we're talking about are going to be the same for both dinim, but they may still be two different dinim coming to make two different messages. So perhaps that's how we could look at the relationship between the two if we assume that they are indeed different. Okay, so we said a lot, so I'll just recap it. Everyone with me? Anything make sense? Okay, so just recap, and then when we come back to this, we'll come back to the details of Bayirah Bayimatzeh and trying to address some of the questions that you put on the table before. Whose chametz does it apply to? What kind of chametz? What's the relationship between the two Yisurim of Bayirah, Bayimatzeh? All that we still have to figure out, but it just gives us a little bit of a platform. So what did we discuss? We talked about the reasoning for Bayirah, Bayimatzeh. The Ran, very widely quoted and perhaps the consensus position, that it's there to keep us away from eating chametz, and here specifically because of both chumrah, that's a kares, and risk, because we are not kept away from it all year long, and therefore there is a greater zehirus that we have, and we talked about why Yom Kippur might not qualify, even though it's also a temporary and kares, but the difference is either that we don't eat at all, or there's only one day, whatever reason it is, Yom Kippur could have been in this category, but doesn't make it practically. We noted that while many Rishonim and Achronim seem to all follow this idea, there's some important nuances. A very interesting point of the Rashbet in his Yavin Shmua that this is why Chametz Shel Hekdesh is excluded, because we have a natural avoidance of Chametz Shel Hekdesh because of the Hekdesh aspect, because of Ni'ilah. And we talked also about the Meiri, who also has a bad distancing, but he says for that reason, that's why Torah obligated us Lazaro, which seems to point to Tashbisu as what's associated with this. And we talked about how Tosis on Dav Beis, which identifies Achila as the reason for Bedikas Chametz, but also makes the point that Chazal responded to the cue they saw from the Torah. The Torah was so machmir with Bayra Bayimatzeh, they understood that they should take a further step to keep us from eating it, and that's where Bedika comes from. And we talked about how Zal Nechemia discusses this in his Sefer, and he explains that we know this because it's unique, that the Torah sometimes gives us Yisuri Achila, sometimes Yisuri Hana, but that you can't even own it, you can't even have it in your house, that's pretty extreme. And even Avodah Zarah, which sounds like it has such a parallel thing, it's still different because it's really just an extension of the Yisuri Hana, and it's not an independent prohibition of owning it. And talked about how he explained that that's why when it comes to Chametz B'Taruvitz, that there's a requirement, Magen Mishnah understands, that it have a kedayas chametz that can be edible kedei achilas pras, and the focus of the eating parameters in defining by your Abba Matzeh seems to come from that kind of a concern, and we suggested that that was also what Rabbeinu Tam was getting at. Rabbeinu Tam actually says there's no issur by your Abba Matzeh by Kol Machmetzes. And we discussed from there that maybe it's because he sees both as some kind of a safeguard, and that even on a Torah level, we don't combine safeguards. And I know since Yag with Yag, we talked a little bit about why that might be. And then we ended with the question of, okay, so if Bayira Bayimatzeh is about that, so is Tashbisu also about that? So some indications that yes, that's how the Meiri sounded, and Tavis Ben Sofer also sounds, because he shows that the Pasuk emphasizes both Nichrasa and the short duration of Pesach, but that Pasuk starts with Tashbisu, so it's assuming that Tashbisu and Bayira Bayimatzeh are perhaps connected, but Zalman Chamiya thought that they were different, and that Bayira Bayimatzeh is about Achila, but Tashbisu isn't, because Al-Hatzad, that it requires Shreifa. So how could we care, why would we care how you're doing it if it's just there to keep you away from it? And if indeed there are two different models, so we then suggested on top of that that it could be that there are two different teams here. There is chametz as bad by itself, and there is chametz that's bad just so that we can emphasize the good of matzah. And chametz that's bad by itself, that's what Bayimatzeh is addressing. And chametz that you avoided in support of matzah, that's what Tashbisu is representing, and each one has its own focus. But nonetheless, they share dinim through this hekesh, this gezer shava, and that the same standard applies to both, and that's still going to affect how it plays out. Okay, so we will stop here. I'll see you, God willing, tomorrow at 9 o'clock, but again, because of the Thanksgiving schedule, tomorrow will be a parsha day. And have some very fascinating things to explore in Parsha Vayetze. Overall, a fascinating Parsha. And I wish you all a safe and healthy day of avoiding all bad things and being able to emphasize good things. And it should be productive and inspiring. Okay, we'll see you soon.